Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, James Gifford, coming to you on location at Agile Denver's Mile High Agile conference here in wonderful Denver, Colorado. And today I'm joined with Lynn Winterboer and
Kristen McLemore.
I'm going to butcher it. We'll fix this.
We'll fix this.
It's okay.
Say Kristen
McLemore.
I put it
in your head and then I screwed
you up.
Kristen
McLemore.
Kristen McLemore.
Oh, it's almost like you're saying Kristen and Lamore, like Lamore.
Lamore. Oh, there you go. Well, and I always think of the rapper, McLemore.
And true to form, I've butchered your names. So we've officially started an Agile Uprising podcast correctly.
That's right.
So today we're going to talk about coaching coaches, and we'll kind of turn it over to Lynn and we'll kind of dive deeper into this.
Okay, well, thank you. So the reason I was interested in talking about this today is that I love being an Agile coach. Really, really love it. And I think one of the things I love the most about it is that there's no limit to how much I can learn and grow in this role. And I also love that as in this role, I can actually fill a bunch of different roles for my clients because I can happily step in and fill a Scrum Master role and really enjoy engaging with the team. I can step in and coach executives on some of their choices. And I like the diversity of it. However, the more that this role becomes a thing, the more it becomes something that people want on their resume so they can get a job, the more hierarchical it starts to become. And I've encountered coaches who sort of talk belittlingly of people, let's say, of Scrum Masters or of team coaches, or, you know, and that there's become this hierarchy, and I don't really like the hierarchy, and I don't think it's very healthy. And one of the reasons, one of the things I've done to sort of remind myself that I don't want to buy into that hierarchy is I have engaged my own coach outside of my company. It's a personal investment I make. And Kristen is my coach, and I am really loving the experience of having somebody officially designated to coach me, because then I'm going to continue to grow, and I'm not going to ever think I've hit that top, and that I should look down on the other people who are on their own paths.
Yeah, and for me, I actually hired a coach while I was still working at my last company because we were all disparate locations. We had people literally all over the world that worked together, but we were never on the same account. We never saw each other. Once a year, we would get together for a coaches conference. But as all of us know who've gone to conferences before, it's 1 or 2 days. And then what do you do afterwards? Because not all the same people were with you when you learned something new. And sometimes you don't have the ability to find someone even in your company that can help you, that can not only has the skill, but you jive together. Like, you really can rely on each other and communicate really well. So I met someone while I was at a conference, and because we believed the same things and going to this conference, I asked her, what is it that you do? And she said, oh, I do this, this, and this. And I said, oh, I'm so interested in that. Let me learn more about it. And then she ended up coming in and helping me coach with my own team. And then I hired her to be my coach. And we'd been working together for almost a year before I decided to start coaching other coaches. But it seems so silly because for the longest time, I had changed to do so many jobs. I'd been a project manager, then I was a recovering project manager when I learned about Scrum, then I was a Scrum Master, and then I tried PO for a little while, and it was all self-learning.
Yeah.
So we brought a company in to help us and train us, but they weren't there all the time. And they're also not dealing with my specific and unique challenges, where I could actually say openly, I think I suck at this, but I'm not sure. Could you like watch me do something and then let me know afterwards?
Yeah.
Because you know what I should be doing because you're an expert. And I'm kind of like, I'm as close to an expert in the company right now as there is, but yet I still want to learn more. And I know I could be doing better, but I need it that feedback from someone who's at that next level that I can rely on. And it was humbling, to get feedback like that for the first few times, because there were definitely some things I needed to change. And they were very quick to tell me about it, but they said it in such a loving, honest way that I knew they cared about me as a person. And that's the part of coaching coaches that I think is so critical. And Lynn, we've talked about this before. You do such a great job in empathizing where other people are, to then help them through that challenge wherever they are. Because we say that all the time, you know, start with where you are. But do we really know where that person is? Have we taken the time to kind of get to know them, to understand this has nothing to do with whether or not you should be doing a stand-up?
Right, right.
This actually has more to do with them being willing to talk to each other about what the plan for the day is and talk about impediments or whatever the topic is to get something done. So yeah, it was almost synchronistic when you reached out to me about doing the coaching, because it was not something that I had told anyone that I was going to start doing. So it was
I emailed you like the next day,
I know, right?
Yeah, it was so really awesome. And I had found out that Kristen had left her company, and so I thought, oh gosh, I've been thinking about wanting to work with her for a while, and so it was fun that I emailed you, and then you emailed right back, oh my gosh, I just yesterday decided that's what I want to be doing. It was good timing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, those are all, like, we've definitely kind of gone in a couple different directions here, and they all kind of tie back. So can we kind of pick at the Scrum Master snubbing in, like, coach, like, because by definition, the Scrum Master is a coach to the organization. It says it right there in the 19-page guide. We have, you know, the stratas now of, like, I'm a portfolio coach. I'm the enterprise coach. I'm the enterprise transformational awesomeness coach.
Yeah. Well,
like, and, you know, I keep going back to, you know, is some of this being driven by how the nature of the consulting industry has gone? And from billing, because as a person that hires coaches, like, I'm a full-time person, so I'm not a consultant, so I work for a company full-time, and our organizational structure is I run the transformational group, but we don't have designations for portfolio. I hire people that have they're like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
They may totally suck at product management, but I have hired somebody else that had those skills so that I can build out a team of people that can then cross-pollinate and collaborate.
I've always looked at it as your sweet spot. So there are some people that are just really good at connecting to engineers and testers. And for them, they could be a career Scrum Master, but they're going to be the best goddamn Scrum Master you could ever find in a company. But we don't reward that. We don't look at that as a career achievement. And we like you're saying, it's almost devalued. Oh, that you're just a Scrum Master. When in reality, they are the best. And then there's someone else who's like, well, I don't really connect that well. I mean, I know how to do Scrum and I know how to all the roles, responsibilities, and ceremonies, but I don't really get joy out of that. What I really love is working with the program level folks and helping them build strategy around that program, or developing the right teams together and do planning and, you know, be that liaison between the executive team and the teams. But again, I think a lot of people think of it's just a career path.
Yeah.
Or I should even restate that. That's just a promotional path.
Yeah.
Versus a career path.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, and what I was going to say is that something I really like about a recent client is that when I was interviewing with them, they had these different names for different coaching roles. And they said, do you see yourself more, you know, at the value stream level, or are you more comfortable in the program within the value stream, or do you like working with teams better? And I paused and I thought, and I said, well, is there a pay difference? And what I really appreciated was what she immediately shot back was, nope, there's no pay difference. We are hiring good individuals and we're letting you self-select into where you think you can make the biggest difference. And that actually made me say, yes, this is very interesting to me. Because I love to work with teams and I'm really good. And I think part of it's that empathy. And I love to work with Scrum Masters, and I love to be a Scrum Master, because in the end, that's who's helping the workers, the people doing the work and actually creating the value. That's who's helping them the most, is the Scrum Master. So I really loved that mindset at that client.
And in contrast, I got not bored with being a Scrum Master, but it wasn't, like I said, bringing me that joy that felt like I was being effective.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I started working at the portfolio level that I got introductions to senior folks and realized, let's just be honest, the amount of dysfunction at that level and miscommunication about what the teams need versus what the business needs, that really guiding that conversation to a better outcome, I felt like this is where I can make a difference.
Yep, I agree.
So every time I was offered a position as a Scrum Master, I turned it away, not because it was beneath me, but because I knew that my heart wouldn't be in it.
Right.
I could do an okay job, but I felt like I could make such a bigger impact somewhere else. So I love that the company was willing to see that they're all valued.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the person who's working at the program level with me in that is... he's so good at helping and honestly, I think it is because he came from a background of being in middle management, and so he could really help with that program level because he could empathize with them, and we are an amazing team. Like, we're a really good partnership. So that's all good. That's all fine and dandy. But in this same, it's a large organization, same organization, there are people who will make jokes about, you know, Scrum Masters being kind of newbies. And I don't appreciate that. I don't think it's something we should be joking about as coaches.
Not to be a bit of an antagonist to
Yes.
that, there is something that I think that some quote unquote agile coaches might be pointing out.
Okay.
Just like it used to be where you got your PMP certification and wow, you must be excellent. Now you're going to get hired as a project manager, but you have no practical experience.
Right. Yes.
The same thing started happening with the Scrum Master certs.
Absolutely.
People
would
go and pass
that.
The tests, and they did a wonderful job with the test, but to apply that was very difficult for them. And they started to represent Scrum Masters in a way that a lot of folks who had the experience would go, well,
yeah,
that's
it
not
became
me.
Very commoditized.
Yeah.
Because it was so easy to get that title and companies didn't know. And I appreciate very much the Scrum Alliance, which is the organization that I'm most familiar with because they're here in Colorado. They're doing a really good job of sort of enhancing their certification path to have the advanced Scrum Master. But, I think in general, so an article that I recently was exposed to about 6 months ago by Barry Overeem, I think it's called The 8 Stances of a Scrum Master, and in that article, I hope this is, I'm giving this quote to the right person, but he talked about how he changed his title from Agile Coach to 100% Scrum Master, and like on LinkedIn and on all his blog posts and everything. He said, because we should all just call ourselves Scrum Masters. And you know, this whole, we've created this segregation by creating this term coach, but we're all Scrum Masters. Even if we're a Scrum Master helping other Scrum Masters, it's all the same thing. It's just who's your audience. And I really appreciated that. And I think that's what sparked the idea in my head that why don't we all call ourselves Scrum Masters? Like, or why don't we all, you know, why do we create this segregation? But to be fair to you, there are Scrum Masters who are brand new, and they have that title, they have that certification, but they don't really know how to do it. Doesn't mean that maybe they are going to bring, let me back that up, maybe they will bring something really unique and special to that role because they're not marinated in it already, because they're coming in with a fresh set of eyes.
But then I would push that back to that audience of Agile coaches to say, then what is your responsibility?
Oh.
Because if you think that the existing Scrum Master group is not up to par,
mm-hmm.
guess who is responsible for getting them up to par?
Right.
So if you want to poo-poo that role, you're kind of poo-pooing your own ability to raise them up.
Yeah, yeah. Or the value of what you bring.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to one of my favorite authors, Steve Farbury, wrote a book called Radical Leap, but he also wrote a book called Greater Than Yourself. And it basically teaches people to pick someone that they see potential in, tell them explicitly why you picked them and what you will do for them in their career, and make them greater than yourself.
Oh,
and that is such a huge thing.
That is.
Because this is, you know, you can use all that cliche terms of pay it forward, you know, giving back and all of those things. But the reality is, as an Agile coach, I think that you are as close to a people manager as you will get in the Agile world.
Yeah.
And it's your responsibility to share what you know to other people so that they can take your place.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I don't want to do this forever. I really want to look forward to retirement. You
know? At some point.
I will still have a whiteboard, stickies, and Sharpies
you
in my retirement
home. You
always
will in your retirement camper.
Yeah.
And so in some of this, I think some of it, those HR is finally catching up with the times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, the company I work at, we spend extensive amount of time meeting with HR to help them understand it when we built our career ladder.
Great.
For the Scrum Master. So basically we have a Scrum Master, like Scrum Master 1, Scrum Master 2, Scrum Master Coach, which, like, so basically entry level, like the bottom, like entry level Scrum Master, we only give them one team.
Yeah.
And we let them cut their teeth on one team because there's a lot of growth. I got to teach them facilitation. I got to, you know, most people don't have facilitation skills because we stopped teaching it forever ago.
Right, yeah.
But so, like, how to collaborate. Like, so I'm really investing in this tier of people. So we want to have them not constrained by multiple teams, all that nonsense. Then the next level up is our, you know, our Scrum Master 2, which essentially has two teams.
Mm-hmm.
No more than two teams. That is our stance. Like, there
right.
is Scrum Master, no more than two teams. And then that next bracket up is the Scrum Master has one team, and then they spend time with the other Scrum Masters and other teams providing them coaching. So we're building that like path
model
to coaching, and then we have... we don't hire portfolio coaches. We have a site coach, and they're responsible for whatever's going on in the development center. And, you know, when I hire people, I try to hire people that complement the team. So if one person doesn't have these skills, I can always pair two coaches together to cross-pollinate, cross-knowledge. But we built that into the career ladder as you go up in progression. And then there's the whole manager hierarchy kind of thing, where, like, we have a Scrum Master manager role because we have centralized the Scrum Masters all under the Agile organization. So there is no Scrum Master reporting to development managers. Like, we have a career defined ladder where we can build out curriculum and actually invest in people.
Now, Good. Would you say that is more common than rare, or more rare than common though,
At every company, so I've been at, like, 7 different companies now. And since I started this whole journey, and I've seen every kind of reporting structure known to man, from reporting to the engineering manager, I've seen agile coaches report to HR or organizational development, and I've seen the gamut of everything. And but what I find is what I so we've had this structure now for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about a year and a half, because we've spent the first 6 months with hybrid Scrum Masters. So a developer playing the role of Scrum Master, which it turned out to be less than, it turned out to be okay, but like the continuous improvement didn't really happen because they would pitch in on development. So we put in the place where all the Scrum Masters report in there. You know, we're on our way to 80 to 100 teams.
So
we needed management layers in there, but
yeah.
we wanted to make sure that our Scrum Masters essentially had a manager that, and our managers aren't, they're not responsible for delivery. They're responsible for growing.
That's wonderful.
People
yeah.
and hiring talent.
Yeah.
Now they have to get in the fire a little bit here and there, but like, so when we hire the Scrum Master manager is literally somebody that's there to invest in the Scrum Masters to grow them.
Well, and I guess my question was more around having that many available people to lean on as you were trying to grow in your career, because I've worked with about 40 companies now over the last, 7 years, and as a consultant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And
3 months
about
here.
Job hopper.
three months there, 6 months.
I mean, there were a lot of overlap in there too, but many of them, it was either a financial constraint or a belief constraint that to have more coaches with more experience to help them was necessary or even advantageous. So that was why I was asking, is because I'm looking at this as, okay, if the topic is coaches,
yeah.
who do these coaches have access to help them? And I think that my theory is there are a lot more people out there who don't have an internal person that they can lean on So where do they go?
Yeah. Well, so, and actually that ties back to my concern about the hierarchical nature of where the this type of role is going. Because if you don't have somebody officially whose job is to help you grow, then it can get really lonely because you're in there with a bunch of coaches and you don't want to be that person who doesn't know that thing that somebody else knows or who isn't as good at that, because it does feel a little competitive, especially when you're consulting.
Or you know even this much and yet the leadership tells you no on the things that you know should work.
Right.
They don't want to do it. And so you're frustrated because you're like, I'm going to throw my hands up in the air because I've gotten all this knowledge that I want to impart on this team. And yet management won't let me do those things. So they have no one to champion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think both of those things can happen too.
Both of those. They really can.
And that's what I think has a contributing factor to the whole, Scrum Master.
Yeah.
Because they see too often someone say, oh, yeah, I'm a Scrum Master with such and such company. And then they get in there and they look at what they're doing. They're like, what the hell?
Yeah. What is going on here?
Scrum Master / Project Manager.
Yeah. Dev Manager. I mean,
yeah.
Like, how many hats can you wear? And some of them, I will say, you know, some people with multiple hats, they do an excellent job at all three of them, but I always push back and say, how much are you giving up and how much is your team giving up because you have to switch hats so often?
That's a good question.
And you know what? Sometimes they don't have a choice. Sometimes it's financial and other reasons why there's really no alternative right now.
Right now.
But I think having, for example, coming to a conference, going to a meetup, hiring a coach of your own, those are all viable options. And I would even go as far as to say that most companies offer each person in the company professional money every year that they can use to get any kind of training or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Why not hire a coach?
Yeah.
For yourself.
Yeah.
And if you have a training plan and a growth plan that you're working with your manager and the coach, I mean, that's what I ended up doing with my professional dollars for a whole year. I spent all of it on getting my own coach because I just felt like I need somebody outside the company who's not biased.
Yeah.
That hasn't gone native.
Yeah.
That can say, really? You really want to? You really think that?
Yeah.
Like, what? You sure?
That's
you
it.
Know, because I'd be like, oh, no, not. Thank you. Damn it. I hate it when you're right.
Yeah.
You know? And you can't
Absolutely.
Always have those conversations with people that you work with.
So no. It's and hard. It's and I love having the ability to, you know, talk with you on a regular basis. And, you know, of course I have the SOS, like I'll text you
yes.
with like, oh my gosh, this just happened and I have
yeah.
no idea what to do with it.
Right.
And it's lovely to be able to admit, I'm not sure what to do with this. And I'd really like to talk through that with somebody else, because then I turn around and I do a much better job for my client than if I tried to pretend I had it all together and could figure it out on my own.
Plus, you have—it's like you have the red phone that when you give the answer, I don't know, but I can find out. Oh my God!
Exactly. Yeah. And there was—I can't remember what it was—but there's some situation I texted you about. And you Googled something for me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that was pretty. That was kind of handy. And I
call a friend.
Yes, exactly. but then I want to also talk about like the personal growth that I'm getting out of this. In that.
Here he comes.
So one of the things Kristen did is she interviewed people that work with me because she's not in my organization, so she can't witness me in action, which, you know, would be really lovely if you could. But she went and I gave her some names of people that that are just exposed to me a lot, right? And I tried to make it a variety of people, not just people who really, you know, are my cheerleaders. And so the feedback that came back, like one of the things I'm working on is providing context when I have questions, because I am very, very curious person and I want to know a lot of things. And so, and it was really helpful to hear that, like, I'll jump in and I'll start asking a bunch of questions. And some people could think I'm challenging them when that's not my intent at all. And so it's been helpful to me to have somebody to help me with that little step of like, so Lynn, you're really empathetic and you really connect with people very well, but, you know, and here's some feedback that kind of goes along with that, in that you might be so excited in your quest for information and your curiosity about the situation that you don't realize it might be coming off as a little challenging to people that are on the receiving end of that. And that was really helpful. And like you said, it was in a kind and loving way, and it was just meant to help me be stronger. And I have this little sticky note on my, you know, my monitor that says, provide context for my questions. And it's been really helpful. And I don't know that I would have asked anybody that I'm working with, any of the coaches that I work with, would you mind interviewing the other people and then giving me some coaching? You know, like, it's kind of a lot to ask, right?
But I think what key thing, too, is, like you were saying earlier on, there's a bit of vulnerability that all coaches should have.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to grow, is that I'm admitting that I don't know everything, but I'm also wanting and seeking out growth. So by saying, would you be willing to talk to my coach and tell her about the experience you have with me, is telling them, I know I'm not perfect, and I want you to tell my coach so we can work together to work through that. It used to be like a 360 review or you know, all these other things that people would use in the office that typically come out of the HR learning and development and retention and that kind of thing. And it's great, but it sometimes can miss the boat, especially with folks who are not willing to get feedback. So I'll tell a quick story. I was at a leadership training class on the East Coast. And one of the things they told us to do with our little working teams when we broke out was to walk around the campus and have this exercise done.
Okay.
And the exercise was to tell each other about feedback you had received that was positive and how you responded, and then to talk about feedback you had received that was negative and how you responded. And the person that I was paired up with, without any hesitation at all, said to me, I hate feedback. And not realizing that she was dead serious, I said, oh, really? Not even good stuff? And she said, no, I don't want to know. And I thought, we're all here at a leadership development program. And this is someone who's a people manager saying, I hate feedback. I don't even want to know when I'm doing well.
Interesting.
And my first thought was, what the hell has someone done to this person to create this kind of reaction?
Yeah.
And knowing that I'm, you know, nowhere near the leader and coach that I wanted to be at the time, I thought, okay, this is well above my pay grade or my ability. I don't think I can help her. But I just felt, well, how many other people in the office feel the same way? So when we force them to do like 360s and we tell them you should be picking people who you may not actually get along with because they may actually have positive, you know, things to, or constructive things to say about how to improve, it was just super frustrating. So I think the way we're moving away from that 360 and we're doing more real-time feedback is great, but we also need to coach people on how to give it. Because we don't want to do the bullshit sandwich. Oh, you're so good at this, but you just really suck at that. But you're really good at this other thing. It's like, okay, well, that didn't mean anything to me because you just basically fed me a liverwurst sandwich on, you know, banana bread. So that was disgusting. Exactly.
That's
my
not
point.
Bad, doesn't it?
Nobody wants that.
Nobody.
So don't give it to us. But all these ways in which we've been trying to, you know, get better at feedback, honestly, I think honesty and a good relationship to start off with is so key. So when we say we're coaching coaches, whatever their titles are, there has to be a good relationship to start with, because you can't be an effective coach over a longer term if people don't trust that you care about them enough to work through everything that you talk about. Because that's really hard. I had a boss at one point that gave me guidance on how to demote someone that reported to me.
Oh, interesting.
And they told me that I should do it because there were a round of layoffs going around, and they were in the spreadsheet line that at their pay and their title, they would be the first to go. So if I demoted them, they would get out of that line. But I couldn't tell the person that whenever I did the review. And even now, I remember the look on his face as he stared at me for, no lie, 45 seconds without saying a word.
Wow.
And I thought, is this guy going to punch me over the table, or is he having an aneurysm? I didn't know
you
what
didn't
was going
know.
On. And I kind of leaned forward. I said, do you want to say anything? I will never forget that situation for the rest of my life, because he left my team very shortly after there and got promoted. And I thought, why in the world would my boss have given me that guidance to do that? And then I just, oh, it was so frustrating. But I thought I didn't really have the coaching on how to be a manager.
Right. Even.
So I think in the context of a coach's coach, is that also applicable to people manager?
I think so.
You know?
I think so.
How are we helping people? That just still to this day. I don't even know why I brought that up. But sorry.
That was really.
No, I mean it's totally valid. Like if you look at it, like people, like in as much as I hate the notion of permission to coach, like people need to feel like if I come to you and ask you to be my coach, it's a personal invitation. Like, so I'm ready to receive it. I'm ready to hear whatever you need to hear. And while I detest it, like I should, like people should be like, you're in an organization. We're here to make money. We're here to continuously improve. Like I shouldn't need your permission to help us all get better and win as a company. But there is some level of that psyche where people need to feel like it's invited, it's safe. And there are people like the old 360s, like I can remember just being totally decimated in like 360 reviews because, you know, it was the project manager that you just literally like had to club to half to death to get them off like the team's back. Like you literally just had to save the team from this person, and it turned into this whole big thing. And then 2 weeks later, they're giving you 360 feedback and they crucify you. And we've been working on some like tips for functional managers on like, here's how you empower your team. Like you're here to help them grow on the technical skills but like soft skills, team dynamics. Your scrum master is over here for these purposes. And it's a partnership between you and them to either coach the individuals, like the scrum master should be there and invited to coach the people up. And then you two are partners. If the scrum master can't get through, if the other team members can't get through, then it's time to call in the big guns. But like it's about the team doing it first. And you as the manager focus on getting their skills to the right level.
And creating the safety that they need for that.
Exactly. And so when we look at, since I run that, the coaching organization, I look at the skills where people want to excel. Like I have a lady who literally her passion is teams, and she's like, don't you hold it against me if I only want to be like this, that mid-tier scrum master and run my two teams.
Right.
And I'm like, your two teams went from like teams that were kind of broken and fractured and the team dynamics were bad.
Yeah.
And now they're turning it around. They're highly delivering. If that's what you want to pursue and you're going to look for better ways to do that all day long, as long as you're willing to invest in yourself and do this job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to do. That's it. When we were chatting a little bit before the podcast started, we were talking about kind of peer coaching and you know, groups of coaches that if you can find a group of coaches that forms that is truly a safe space for you, that's a wonderful place. And I know there's things like coaching circles, and there's things like just, you know, if you're in an office, then you have those water cooler chats and stuff like that. The company I work with right now, we're all dispersed. And so we have to actually make an intention to get online at the same time, right? To get on that WebEx. And but it's really worked out great. And it started out, interestingly, with one coach sent an invitation to probably 100 coaches and said, hey, I want to have like a, you know, coaching circle kind of thing. And there were like 4 or 5 people that took him up on that. But we have fun every week. We talk about something that really stretches our brains, and we all get very vulnerable about it. And we admit where, oh boy, this is something I need a lot of help with, or oh, this is something I figured out, you know, and this was my experience getting to that point. And I really, really value that, just the organicness of that.
Can I point out what you just said?
Yeah, what?
Just the phrase, there's something that I'm really not good at that I want to get better at. I think that is a key part of being a really good coach, because you're modeling the behavior. We're asking for teams.
Yes, exactly.
Have.
Yeah, I agree.
And to have, you know, an agile coach that's poo-pooing the scrum master or whatever they're doing with that behavior kind of tells me that
it's not,
they're not seeing that as part of their role.
Right, is to model it. I agree. Yeah. I agree. I also know that it makes me a better coach when I can tell the people I'm working with, you know, hey, I'm working on this with my coach. So, you know, and I'll actually use that sometimes just to say, hey, you know, I want to let you know that I'm going to take a different approach to this conversation because I'm working on being more clear about my, in that example, my intent with my questions. You might notice I'm acting a little differently. So, and I like that. I'm proud to say I have a coach. I really am. I think it's really the right example to set for people. And it helps them, at least the few people I've brought it up with, you know, it's helped them go, oh, so she's not the end-all be-all, knows everything. She's growing and learning too, and it's okay if I grow and learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a similar story. My VP back at when I used to work at AOL years ago, he brought in a professional coach. We didn't know. We happened to be sitting at our staff meeting, and he came in, and this woman was following behind him. She didn't really say anything. She sat at a seat behind the conference table. And after a couple of minutes of just starting kicking off the meeting, he turned around and he introduced her and he said, I just want you all to meet such and such. She is my coach. I am going to be working with her for the next 6 months or whatever it was. And I want all of you to meet with her, if you're comfortable, to talk to her about what you think of my leadership style, the kind of things that you need from me and all this stuff. And I don't think he won't know whether he hears this or not. It doesn't matter. But I remember from that meeting on, I immediately had a different perspective about him.
Yeah.
Because it showed me that he was willing to acknowledge that even at the VP level, he wanted to get better. And my memory serves me, he even explicitly called out things that he wanted to work on. Which for me, I thought, wow, for a VP to say that in front of his entire direct staff and to have her sit in on all of his meetings and do the whole, you know, whisper like,
yeah,
she'll probably not say that. Or there's probably another way to say that, you know.
Yeah.
Because he was a kind of a volatile guy sometimes, but nothing he ever said was wrong. It's just the way he would say it sometimes would come off kind of aggressive and sometimes really upset. And that was a huge moment. I was like, oh, wow. I have so much respect for him because he's willing to admit that he's doing this work to get better. And
that's
cool. It wouldn't have mattered what he did after that. I would have been like, oh, yeah, you're working with a coach. That's awesome.
You know? Right. Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. That's neat. That's really neat. Well, I hope that by having this conversation, we can inspire some other coaches to reach out and to their peers and engage in coaching relationships themselves.
Yeah. And one of the things that's actually something that that I'm piloting right now and that I'll continue to test through the summer is a coaching circle. It's roughly about Scrum team size, and people join it twice a month. We have been doing it over Zoom and just kind of connecting on different themes that we picked up front, but I really want to see where that goes because I feel like meetups are great, but you always get an inconsistent group of people that don't always show up. So it's like a different group of people. But if you had the same group of 5 to 9 folks who are always committed to going, then you build that relationship. And there's from different companies. I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Because I was telling the story earlier this morning, a lot of people feel like they're on an island all by themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And whether you work at the same company or not, sometimes it's better to reach out to people who don't work at the same company because then you can kind of talk openly about things and not feel like, well, I can't talk about this person because she knows them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But if it's in a positive, constructive way, I think it can be really helpful.
I think it really can too.
I mean, we joke about how scrum masters and coaches are really therapy people.
Yeah.
But we need therapy too.
Exactly. And every good therapist I've ever met in my life has their own therapist. Yeah.
Exactly.
If we believe in the profession, we should engage in the profession.
Right. That's well said.
Absolutely.
I could use some therapy right now. And you know, the notion of the coaching circles and that is, you know, it's a very valuable kind of technique and concept. And, you know, the if you look at the board of the uprising, like, we are just one big circle that literally pushes each other. Like, Andy Clef pulls out, like, some of the, like, these fluffy, crunchy, like, and that's not me. Like, I'm an operator. I want to come in and I run change. So when I need the soft, crunchy, like, how do I deal like with this person that needs a shoulder to cry on?
I'm like,
I'm not equipped for that. Well, you need that door over there kicked in. I'm sure going to get it. I'm going to kick that door in for you.
I can be your Papa Bear.
But so like I rely on those people to help me approach different situations. Or, you know, I can remember early on in my, you know, career of like going from making that transition from Scrum Master to like coach, the amount of biases I had.
Oh, yeah.
And like Andy Clef was the first person to kind of start opening my eyes to like some of these biases. And it's like, I can find value in any agile practice as long as I can figure out the context behind it. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing safe or dad or less. Every one of them have something in there I want to steal, but I need to understand the context of it. And that's what helped me get past those biases. But yeah. I needed Andy to show me, oh my God, I have all these biases.
Yeah. Yeah.
To like, and then there was the light bulb, and then it was like, right. Oh, now I can think totally differently about this. And then I grew as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's because I'm surrounded by like these about 10 people.
Well, and there's a lot of courage involved in being vulnerable, but in your context, these are 10 people that you trust, right?
Or
that
psychological safety is phenomenal.
And so it doesn't take as much courage to be vulnerable there. But that's cool. I mean, I wish every coach could have that kind of support group. And I think at the very least, if you ask to engage in a coaching relationship with another coach, it gives you that at least you got one person in your corner helping you that way. So I'm very glad that I've done it.
Well, so just to be respectful of your guys' time, we're kind of coming up on the time box. So, you know, if people wanted to get a hold of you, like how could they find you, get in touch if they wanted to keep talking to you about coaching circles or coaching coaches? How can they find you?
So my Twitter is at AgileLynn, LYNN.
And I'm at HeyMacConsulting.com.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time, ladies. It was a very quick time because it was a really engaging conversation. So from the Agile Uprising, this is James Gifford signing out from sunny Denver.